Yeah, we're just keeping this one in. We're leading in with the giggle. It is August 18th, 2021. Today we discuss security in the clouds and data security. I am Michael Axe, architect, technologist, and this is the Technology Architecture Solution Engineering Show. You know, when we talk about data, we always have our returning champion and partner of the show, Chris Furless. Chris, how you doing?
Doing excellent. Thanks very much. How about yourself, man?
I'm doing well. So security's been top of mind recently, not just because of things happening in the day job, but mostly because things happening in the day job. It just seems to be like one of those really hot button things that are going on. We see it in the news. We see it with our clients and our customers, and I'm sure you're seeing it as well. So what we thought was we did a pretty good high level pass on some MLAI stuff last show, and it was actually requested of me several times that we do another high level pass or two with you, and then we'll maybe have some dip down in the weeds shows on some other topics. But these high level passes have been really well responded to by not just technologists, but the business side alike, which is good, right? So we want the business to understand so we can help adopt what we want to do out there. So thank you for jumping aboard the train, and it is going to be a security topic today. So how are you feeling about that today, Chris?
Yeah, I mean, you know, security is always going to be top of mind. I find that we sort of have an interesting array. You know, I of course work with enterprise customers primarily, and a little bit of small business here and there, but primarily enterprise customers. And you know, we have the sort of less sophisticated, all the way through to the overly sophisticated, right? And, yep. And generally, we find that, you know, obviously, you know, big proponent of security, but we want to make sure that we are not also hindering ourselves by being over secure. And I think that it kind of goes to the age old, you know, defining what is secure and defining what does security mean to your organization. You know, when somebody asks me the question, is this secure? Generally, I come back with the, well, if you put a fence around your yard, can somebody still jump the fence? Yes. Are they likely to? I don't know. Where do you live? Do you live in Compton or do you live in Beverly Hills? Right. And so everything is relative. You can always buy a bigger lock. You can always build a taller fence. But you have to just determine, you know, sort of what is within the realm of necessity from a security standpoint. Microsoft spends over $1 billion a year securing its infrastructure. Obviously, we've been partnering with governments around the world to, you know, thwart ransomware attacks and you know, some of the ransomware gangs and those types of things. You know, so the 3,500 security professionals that Microsoft employs, you know, they probably have a pretty good idea of what they're doing, you know, as opposed to having to go and, you know, spend big money for a CISO and a security team and all that. You know, maybe it makes sense to consider some different ways of doing that.
Yeah, absolutely. The statement you made is so true. Is like, you know, way back in the day, a security professional before it became, I don't know, in to be a security person once told me the only secure computer is one that's buried in a sealed vault underground, not plugged in, not powered, right. Which right. It applies today, right? So if there's technology out there, there's a way to get through to it. The question is what measures are you taking? Sure. And what is the steps you're doing to be good stewards of data? So there's, you know, an access issue, and then there's a stewardship issue. And when we talk security, like for the day job at Aspirant, we have a security lane, and I'm constantly having security conversations. And one of our partners on the security side, other than Microsoft and Microsoft tooling, Defy, we continuously have the conversation around like what tooling is in place, what is best for your organization and how your organization operates. So you make that key distinction between. You know, we can throw a security appliance or service or something up there for sure. Yeah, you bought that, you subscribe to it, but does that mean you're secure for what you do and how you use your networks, but also how you're protecting and being a steward of that data? Microsoft has a lot of not lines in the sand. I don't say it like that as in, you know, passing the buck, but they have a clear delimiter on what they're doing and what you as a customer should be doing. And, you know, I bring this up in the pregame beforehand, you know, we just mentioned real quickly, I was not being hyperbolic when I said I have this conversation at least twice a day. It's true. There is a responsibility division that occurs between having some cloud services or even any services for that matter through Microsoft. And when you're in Azure or say in 365, certain things Microsoft says, yes, we'll take care of that responsibility. Other things, it's on the customer to have that responsibility. And, you know, we're talking everything from, you know, if you have your on-premises gear, you're obviously responsible for the physical infrastructure, you know, the hardware patching, the microcode for the processors, all the driver, everything. Once you start shifting more towards, you know, infrastructure as a service or platform as a service, that responsibility for that gear starts to go away. A lot of this is no longer feasible for you to secure. So Microsoft says, yes, we'll take that on, right? So there is a shared responsibility model out there. And there's also frameworks in place from Microsoft to help you as a customer to guide you into making some of those best practice maneuvers and choices. So where they hand off that responsibility to you as a customer, there's also, they're not saying you're on your own. They're saying, well, here's some best practice guidance. I'm not sure how much you're seeing that out there, that conversation occurring.
Yeah, it's a mix. You know, like I said, some customers are extreme about it. And in order to get anything through security, you know, there's a dozen forms of paperwork that have to be filled out. And, you know, you have to sort of do a backwards hula hoop around the edge of your swimming pool. You know, and again, those are sort of extreme examples and can be very prohibitive for, you know, third-party companies, you know, Microsoft and everybody else, right? We try our best to help make sure a customer has a secure infrastructure architecture, you know, and we give that best practice guidance. But we also realize that it can be difficult to follow all of that to a T, you know, whether it be, you know, a human approach, whether it be a budgeting approach. You know, there are a lot of sort of things that can hinder progress in that area. But what we get is a lot of questions around, you know, how can we secure this better, right? So, you know, when we think about, like, you know, let's just use a basic example, like say, you know, storage, just basic storage, right? You know, you have blob storage, you've got data lake storage, you've got data lake storage Gen 2, you know, and each of those has its own security principles, right? And it really comes down to what the requirements are, right? Are we putting PII up there? So then, you know, each of the files then needs to be encrypted, you know, in order to make sure that we're protecting that customer to the extreme. You know, are we handling the secret keys that are used for decrypting that data, or is Microsoft handling those keys? You know, are we going to apply role-based access controls? And then, you know, are we going to have granular controls, you know, from a hierarchical standpoint of, you know, securing the file, securing the folder, securing the container, you know, sort of working our way out, you know, as you know, you go from sort of granular to broad, you know, and so generally what we try to do is provide those best practices. We have what's called the cloud adoption framework, and there's a whole pillar around security. You know, whether it's identity, access management, access control, you know, encryption, those types of things. You know, and so every once in a while we get a customer ask, well, how secure is an Azure data center? And it's kind of rare at this point, because I think it's really been broadcast from the mountains how much goes into the physical security at an Azure data center.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you have a better chance of like wandering onto a runway at an airport than actually walking into the front door of an Azure data center if you're not supposed to be there.
Yeah, for sure.
I kid, but like for real, I mean, it's like seriously, seriously locked down and secure. And it's not just locked down and secure from the outside perspective, it's locked down and secure in the inside. So before we go into like maybe some row level security options and some things like that in the data space, let's talk about two things real quick. These are things that, again, I have these conversations all the time with customers for the day job, and not customers, for some of the nonprofit stuff that I'm involved with too as well. So as you had the question, how often, how secure is a data center? You know, the questions I get is, how does Microsoft in Azure keep our data separate from everyone else's? Because they know that there's these big giant buildings. There's two in Virginia, you know, there's East US, East US two. They're all over the place. There's 60 some now, I believe, data centers worldwide. So, you know, when you start putting your data there, how do they do that? Well, there is some very simple things that are in place, you know, some really fundamental practices that are done in a best practice manner that keeps data segregated. There's logical isolation that keeps the data that's your customer data or your personal data separate from everyone else's, so that the zeros and ones that are yours are not commingling with the zeros and ones that are, you know, insert large big box store that maybe is using Azure. And so once it's there, then, okay, you know, the next question I always get to, like, okay, sure, yeah. Data separate, then they're like, well, what about protection? Because it's sitting there, somebody else is in there. Well, there's at rest and in flight or in transit, I believe, as Microsoft uses. Protection, data protection, it's encrypted, completely encrypted. So you're not going to be subject to somebody else in an Azure, same East US or East US 2, wherever you're at, somebody else being in there is not going to be able to get to your stuff, right?
Mm-hmm. So to that point, that's one thing you got to be careful of, right? Because not all services are encrypted in flight, and not all services are encrypted at rest. The vast majority of them are, but some of them, the technology hasn't quite caught up yet to be able to handle that. So make sure you're checking those things. Some of the you know, wide ranging, highly adopted products like a SQL or a Power BI or something like that, that's going to have those features available for customers, and they're going to be most likely on by default. You know, in some occasions you can turn off those encryptions. You know, so for instance, you know, a very specific example like transparent data encryption. You know, so TDE. Right. Or sorry, transparent disk encryption. Apologies. and basically, you know, this can be turned on and off. It is on by default, but you do have the option because there is some overhead to encryption. Absolutely. And so, you know, just sorry to cut you off, but just want to make sure that that's clear, is that it's not always secured in flight. Make sure it is ahead of time.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's especially if it's leaving the endpoint. If it's within Azure, if it's in the Azure backbones across the fiber, they use MACSEC, which is encrypt by default. So like if all your stuff never leaves Azure, even if the service you have, you don't want to have that overhead on, and it's traveling between, say you need to move data, maybe you're doing Redis and something else, and you need to shuffle stuff across the globe, across the backbones, it does use MACSEC. So that if for those who don't know what MACSEC is, to bring it back up. Sorry, I'm starting to get geeky on the network layer here. Sorry. That's IEEE for data link layer encryption. And that's encryption on by default. So that's, you know, you're going to get that across all backbones, even if your service doesn't. But the point you make is, was leading. That's a great lead into my next thing, is that you know, certain services, you know, you can turn that off or you can make adjustments to it. You're taking that on as a customer for that. Right. But you know where the whole thing blows up, right? It's when you put it to the edge, right? So say you're publishing or putting a public endpoint out there. Now, anything that goes across that endpoint, unless you do some services to make sure that it's encrypted beyond that, you're now traversing the public internet. Now you need to look at maybe, you know, front door or application gateways. There's a myriad of services and devices. Right. But to bring that back up, that was the perfect segue into, yes, know what you're doing, but also know where your traffic's going. Because by default, if it's on the Azure backbone, there's these high level, you know, encryption connections between data centers. But if you go across the boundary or the edge, as we like to say, and get it out there into the public, you're on your own, right?
Right. And that goes to, you know, non-Microsoft certified devices, you know. Yes. Yep. Because look, when it comes down to it, at the end of the day, Azure is a platform, right? Yep. And first and foremost, Azure is a platform. And so we may not have support for your edge device. We may not have support for your IoT device, or we may not have the encryption support for that device, because you know, we put that onus on the manufacturer of the device that wants to work in the Azure platform, which makes sense. I mean, we're not manufacturing edge devices per se. We're IoT devices. We do have Azure Edge, right? What is it? Azure Stack Edge, I think is the name of it.
That's its new one.
Yeah. And so, You know, we look at that and, you know, that does have those encryption standards in place. It's connecting through TLS 1.2. It's using, you know, a VPN tunnel between Azure and the device itself. So even though it's going over the public internet, you're still encrypting that data from end to end. You know, but if you're using another device and you're hooking in, you know, through a VPN or something like that, and you don't have some of those tunneling protocols turned on, that's something that you need to consider.
Yep, absolutely. So just to kind of recap and bring it up for those who maybe not as cloud oriented or as in depth in the cloud. So know what you have out there, know what is on from an encryption perspective, have an understanding on if your data traffic and maybe your data flow to know where it's going and understand what it's doing. If it's crossing boundaries being going across the public internet or staying within the back backbone of Azure, or maybe across an express route or a VPN or to another cloud provider, because we have customers that are hybrid cloud. There's a lot of various things that you can do out there. So I'd be remiss if I didn't take 40 seconds, maybe 30, if I can do this really quick. One of the other things, though, it's not necessarily a security tool, but we think of it along lines of security, is redundancy and replication. So when we have data or VMs or blob, when you provision a storage account, there's multiple ways you can provision it. Out of the box, the standard pricing, standard config is LRS. That's local redundancy. And that means with inside of your storage area, there's multiple copies. I believe at least three copies, if I'm not mistaken.
Correct.
Yep. And then there's zone redundancy. So you can actually spread three copies again across multiple zones within that particular region that you put your workload in. And then there's the all-hallowed GRS, which is your geo-redundant, and please help me, I don't want to get this wrong. I think it's six copies, if I'm not mistaken, across multiple geos.
I think it's three and three, I believe.
Yep. So those are ways in which your data is redundant and I say somewhat protected. It is definitely protected from a zeros and ones perspective. It's not necessarily protected if you decide to go in there and do something not good.
Yeah. And one thing, just kind of stepping back for a second, bringing it up, is remember too that you have to define what your requirements are, right? There is such a thing as over securing what you need to do based on what your requirements are. Yep. If you're storing pictures of cats that have no need to be secured or anything like that. Save yourself some money, save yourself some overhead, you know, and, you know, really consider what the use case is. You know, and on the opposite side, if you're working with a government entity or, you know, a partner to the government that requires GovCloud, right? I mean, this whole special secret cloud for, you know, government entities, U.S. government. I just saw a headline. I didn't read it. So, you know, hopefully I don't butcher it too bad. But my understanding is that the Azure cloud just received top secret clearance, which is sort of a threshold above secret clearance. And you know, so they just got that certified recently. And so lay out what your requirements are and then work with your Microsoft teams, work with the Aspirant team, work with the professionals that you're working with to make sure that you're fulfilling those requirements you have.
Yeah, you make a good point. So we're still at the data center layer here. So it is worth bringing that up, that Azure Gov, and also there's FedRAMP. There's several different models to move things into the proper place. And these are segregated areas of data centers or data centers themselves that are built for government and or those who transact with government. So like we deal a lot, especially in the messaging and collaboration space, ITAR, which is like, you know, we can't email anything outside of the boundaries of the continental United States or the lower 40, however they want to define that. And then there's CMMC, which is another, that's a cybersecurity mature model certification. And there's CMC High. There's all these different models that the government requires businesses that do work with them. So you make a great point of like, yeah, sure, you can get into business and you can do work with the Gov, but as soon as you start, you know, putting your stuff in the regular cloud, you may be out of compliance. You need to make sure that you're choosing properly. That's a good call, Chris.
Yeah. And the other thing too is, you know, you said something there that kind of triggered in my brain is, you know, keeping it within the boundaries of a state or a country or a region, right? You know, there are region pairs for Azure clouds. When we start talking about, you know, global redundancy and stuff like that, that it may back up to a different region in a different country. And, you know, that's always one thing you have to consider. Again, the use cases where it can't leave the country is generally because of some regulatory or compliance need. You know, you think of the GDPR or what is it, California, like triple CP or something like that, whatever that one is.
And over in Germany and France, they have data sovereignty, right?
Right, exactly, yeah. And so, you know, again, working with enterprise customers, we certainly have to deal with these types of requests all the time. Like, I've got a customer base that lives in Germany. It has to stay in Germany for GDPR requirements for their PII and those types of things. You know, and plus, you know, with some of those compliance requirements, you start looking at, okay, how do I enforce right to be forgotten, I think is how they call it, right? Or is it right to forget or right to be forgotten? Yep. How do I ensure that I'm compliant on that? Because, you know, the fines can be very, very heavy. And, you know, California in the States was just the beginning. And, you know, really, we're going to see it across the states, you know, within a very short amount of time. And if you do business in any way, shape, or form in Europe, you're beholden to GDPR, you know? Yep. And so, you know, and this isn't anything new, right? We've been talking about GDPR for at least 3-4 years, 4-5 years now.
So, at least five, I think.
Yeah. And that was when it went in. And then we're talking about it for years ahead of that as well. So, you know, a lot of those things, again, let's make sure that we lay all those requirements out on the table. And if you don't know, ask, you know?
Yeah, for sure. I'm going to chime in on that GDPR and data sovereignty thing here real quick. So Microsoft really figured it out well when it comes to their SaaS bits. So when you look at M365, so for those who are on the business side, not necessarily the IT side, one of the things, you know, if you're you need to have a governance and compliance model that you have employees or entities that are over in certain areas, their data needs to live inside those areas. So you can actually geography pin specific users to those regions so that when they're hitting their, it's a compliance thing, but I think it might even be an efficiency thing. So if you're pinning a user over in, we'll say Germany, that user's data in their mail stores and all that are going to be over in that region that is compliant with that when you pin someone over there. So if I scratch my head and I was like, okay, well, if it was any other way, you would think there'd be some inefficiencies to try to grab a mailbox across the pond. So there is operational efficiencies complying. So don't think of it as necessarily a barrier. See it as a way of getting, as I like to say, data as close to the people that use it as possible. So, right. So that's definitely a key differentiator. And along the SASE type services, I just want to call out is, you know, they have a lot of these mature model and secure scores and things inside of your M365 that allows you to do the right analysis. There's actually a GDPR tool that it checks your status on how you are configured and what your score should look like. So please reach out if you have any questions around that. I have these kind of conversations all the time. And I brought this up the last time you mentioned GDPR. So like as a Microsoft partner, like we need to be compliant. So like right. with the strictest, you know, and especially since we do business across the pond, right. across our pond.
The big pond.
Yep. Yep. So that's you know, definitely from a SaaS perspective, we know that there's a lot of choices out there. Since we're talking about security, we want to, instead of going down the route of application security, when I say application, I'm saying M365 and Dynamics, we're going to kind of pivot it more towards like some of the data security since we got our data guy here. Well, you're a cloud guy, but I mean, to me, you'll always be a data guy too. Yep,
thanks.
Yeah.
It's a badge of honor.
So, you know, there's a lot of things like we talked about hardening the data center, which when you're in the cloud, Microsoft takes care of. Now you're responsible for your services. We're checking our services to make sure we have the right things turned on. We have the right things turned on at the service layer. But then there's the data layer. When I say data, I'm not talking storage. I'm talking about our databases. I'm talking about the things that interact with our Power Apps and our .NET apps and our business apps, whatever it is that we're putting out there. And there's things that we can do to help, choices we can make to help make sure that we're doing the right things as stewards of that data. And, you know, a couple things, you know, immediately always pop to mind when you think of SQL is like, oh, row level security. And there's like all these different types of things you can do. I think at the barest minimum, identity and access and role-based access controls that you brought up earlier are the things that need to be thought out first, right? Whether you're talking at the data layer or the BI layer. What are some thoughts around that you should have?
Yeah. You know, you're kind of going exactly in my mindset, right? Is the first thing is building, you know, those access control lists or ACLs and role-based access control, you know, RBAC. You know, these are very common terms across the platform. You know, so whether it be storage, whether it be databases, whether it be networking, you know, we're using those as a basis for security typically. You know, and then it's you know, when I think about a project and I want to deploy a couple of services to, you know, I fall back on the data warehouse example a lot. Because, you know, I love the whole topic, but, you know, essentially when we start talking about, we do that data ingestion, how do we secure that? Well, we're using ExpressRoute, right, to be able to pull data on-prem. We're using the on-premises data gateway. If we can't use ExpressRoute or we don't have ExpressRoute, on-premises data gateway in the case of Power BI, and then you've got what's called the integration runtime, the self-hosted integration runtime for the on-premises resources. Now, We can't guarantee that that data is encrypted on the source side, right? That's up to the customer to encrypt it and then decrypt it as it comes across. It's encrypted as it goes over the wire. But you know, if it lands in a spot where it's, you know, then it's not encrypted and it lands in a spot where somebody else has access to it, then you're kind of, you know, you're playing a dangerous game there, as they say. You know, but so you're encrypting that tunnel using one of those tools. You know, ideally you're encrypting the data when it starts. Again, if you need to, right? We're going to assume that you need this encryption, you need this data security, and then you're landing that into your landing zone in your data lake storage. And where are you landing that data? You know, is it customer based or is it transactional system based or something like that, right? We have customers. I don't work as much now, but when I was working with customers in the retail space, we've got a lot of big retailers here that are sort of headquartered out of the Northeast, and you know, they have to make sure that they are putting a focus on, is this data containing PII or is it not, right? And how do we control how it gets moved around and how it gets looked at and how it gets secured and all that, right? So, you know, generally it's like, well, if this is gonna contain PII data, then you need to consider that. Who can have access to it? And most likely, if it has PII for some reporting purposes or something along those lines, it really should be segmented all by itself so that only the right people who can have access to it should get access to it. And then you can go another layer deeper with it by obfuscating that data at the row level within those files, you know. So if you're, for instance, securing CSV data or Parquet data, those kinds of things, you can set it up. There are third-party tools that we work with. One off the top of my head, not a sponsor, is Okera. Mm-hmm. They have a tool that allows you to secure that data at the row level for those Parquet files. Now, that also requires some other infrastructure to be implemented and things like that. But it's going to give you that super granular security all the way down, and they might even do object level, so column and row level on those individual files, which that goes deeper than what we can do in data lake storage. But again, it's all a matter of what's required. It's going to be encrypted when it's in there, but the question is, how are you using it? And then from there, we're going through all of our staging. Same thing. If you're using Data Factory for your transaction, for your transformation piece, or you're using stored procedures for your transformation piece, or whatever the tool is there, there's always the risk of when the data is being processed, it's being loaded into some memory, into some cache somewhere that it's not encrypted. So again, you have to kind of keep those things in mind, right? Then you move it into serving layer, where you're serving it up for, you know, whatever it is, your presentations and things like that. And again, you know, what are you using for that? Are you using Azure Analysis Services? Are you using Power BI? Are you using Synapse? Are you using Databricks? Are you using Snowflake? What are you using for that, right? And if it's required, that data should be encrypted at rest. And then we have come a long way with regard to security. Now, the Microsoft first party tools, the Microsoft tools, your database services, your compute engines, your Power BIs, those types of things, a lot of them now have object level security in some stage of deployment. Some might be still in preview. I don't fully keep up to speed on all those, but essentially you're keeping those individual items, again, based on your identity access control, all the way through to that layer, which then gets pushed out to your Power BIs, to your Excels, you know, and using, what is it, PIM, mm-hmm. Protection Identity Management. And then every step along those lines, for even the users that are accessing those sources of data for using those compute engines, can all be secured using Azure Key Vault, which is essentially then storing the secrets and your certificates and all the important stuff that essentially ensures that you're not relying on somebody entering a password along the way that might have access to the data that they shouldn't have.
Yeah, I just, for those who are listening, because you're not seeing, I just gave the big thumbs up to Key Vault.
Yeah, yeah. And believe me, one of these things is that we're improving these services all the time, right?
Yep.
And so, we've got, just as a for instance, we've got a tool called the SQL IaaS extension, which allows you to use SQL in a virtual machine and use Key Vault with that SQL in a virtual machine. You know, let's just say you can't use managed instance because you require, I don't know, whatever, a file store, right? Or one of those services that we can't handle with managed instance. So you're going to run it in a virtual machine. Well, now we have the capability with this IaaS extension, which is unique to Azure, for anybody who's wondering, to be able to have Key Vault integration at that virtual machine at that SQL Server level. So, you know, you can have your certificates and your secrets all stored for your backups, for your stored procedures, for all of those kinds of things.
That's better than just-in-time administration, right? So one of the things there was this big movement a while ago to, you know, go, I'll air quote, passwordless for administrators so that they are not sitting there pounding out the same password, because, you know, that password gets smaller the more you have to type it, less secure, it gets spread around, it gets put in, you know, really not great places. So one of the things, movements all many, 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 many years ago, decades ago, was like to have a system in place so that when you access something, you were able to have it reach in and get a just a password that was continuously changing. And that was great, right? But they've got it to where a lot of those services are a little bit more streamlined. So when you have that, there's challenges with that from a logistics and operational perspective. So how do you handle that? Is you don't want to have passwords in the clear. You don't want to have credentials in the clear that people can wrench against. So you want to use something like Key Vault. One of the other things, if you should need to, and now not programmatically, because this becomes, you can't really do this programmatically, is if you have administration, you should be, even at the data layer, if you're in there and you're hitting and you're going to wrench on something to build out some new pipelines, or you're going to, you know, fix an API, or you're going to even go in there and change some data factory stuff, when someone's accessing that service, they best be getting an MFA request, and that's multi-factor, right? They better. If you're interacting with a service, you should have this on the ground.
Right. Right. Yeah. No. And again, it's one of those things that are, it's coming along, right? There are quite a few MFA providers out there, and there are different approaches to doing it. And even Microsoft just very, very recently changed the way they do MFA, you know, and they're sort of evolving the way they're doing it. And I think they're, you know, doing a good job of staying ahead of, the competition being the bad guys, by rolling out different ways to implement MFA. There's the text message version, which you see a lot with the SaaS applications, Office 365 and Power BI and those kinds of things. And you've got, your I forget the tool that goes on your phone, like, you know,
Authenticator.
Thank you. Yep. That's a good name for it. it actually drives me a little crazy, because even internally we use, you know, Dynamics for our stuff internally, you know, our CRM and our reporting and stuff like that. And if it sits for a day, you have to re-authenticate, even though I'm on my Microsoft machine using the Microsoft VPN, I still have to re-authenticate that every single day to make sure that nobody's jumped in and sat at my computer and somehow got into it, you know?
Yeah. My personal tenant, I have 3FA. It's kind of cool. I was writing this for an MAIT Pro write up blog and video, and I wanted to see how far along FIDO2 technology came. So between the Microsoft Authenticator app and FIDO2 keys, I have my password and those two devices need to all be hitting at the same time in order to get access. You know, spoiler, it's really dialed in. And the fact that FIDO2 is actually part of an authentication method that Microsoft has out of the box, there's not really much crazy configuration to do this. Mm-hmm. Out of the box, you can have FIDO2 keys. And, mm-hmm. you know, and I urge people, if they're going to do FIDO, you can do a FIDO with biometric, a FIDO with PIN. So again, I'll bring it up just the wee little bit of level. Essentially, it looks like a little Bluetooth or a USB key. Some of them have Bluetooth built on them. So when I am in proximity of one of my machines, it screen will pop up very much like Windows Hello will recognize there's someone near you. If I hit the button, like I'm going to put my password in, I'll get an authenticator message. I'll have to hit my FIDO2 and then I'll put my password in. All three of those have to be in sync in order to gain access to my tenant.
Hmm. Yeah, that's pretty extreme. You really want to keep your kids out of your computer.
I was just really testing it for, you know, the thing is like, okay, so you're talking about how far is too much. So my initial blush was, okay, this is ridiculous, because every time I'm either idle at my machine for 5 minutes or I step away, it's going to require me to do this, right? I'm going to have to put a password in. I'm going to have to hit authenticator and have to have my FIDO key. Well, the good news is again, not bearing the lead in the spoilers. I was working on actually a data project and I was doing changing some tables. I stepped away. I came back. And because it has Bluetooth in it, the proximity, I authenticated against it. As long as I had it in my hand and my thumb on the end of the FIDO key, it's like, okay, I'm going to it's going to assume that validation's right because I have all the devices that are required and I'm next to it. And it was within the time frame that I said was allowable. So it's definitely a good thing. Is it something that everyone wants to roll out? Probably not. You can probably 2FA is probably the best way to go, but,
Sure.
So we're running a little long on time. So let's cut real quick in just a few other technologies. You know, I brought up some like row level security things. Are there some things inside of Power BI? Any technologies at a higher level? If someone's interested in learning more or maybe seeing if their landscape is covered, what are some of the areas that you would suggest people to look under the hood at?
Yeah. I mean, you know, we have a lot of guides around encryption, and we do try to make them somewhat readable by normal humans, right? You don't necessarily need a PhD in cybersecurity to understand what we're getting at with some of the technology. You know, one thing that's good is that we have a very comprehensive security. It's not even a white paper. It's more like a manual or implementation guide, if you will, for Power BI, you know, that kind of goes through helping you make those decisions about your security. What are those requirements? You know, do you need row level security? You know, a great example of row level security in Power BI is, you know, we've got Northeast sales and, you know, I should only be able to see my quota and what I've made against that quota. I shouldn't be able to see my peers' quota and what they've made against that quota. You know, so that's just a very high level, for instance. So in that case, we're going to implement row level security for Power BI. Now, that in that specific case, right, we're going to have those reports that you can get to. But then, of course, we also have access to the cube or the tabular model that's sitting in the background that we consume using Power BI. And so tapping into that, it's sitting in Azure Analysis Services or, you know, inside of a Power BI data model. You know, you can go in there with the right tools and query against that. So really, that security runs back to even that level as you go deeper to make sure that it's all secured in the right way. So even if you have source access, you know, which the normal user wouldn't have source access, they're going to be using Power BI and that's going to be sufficient. But you know, if you have source access, you need to make sure it's secured there as well. There are whole, guides around security principles. And of course we offer tools that can help with that. You know, you think of things like Security Center, Operations Suite, Azure Monitor, and then we have agents for virtual machines, A lot of the tools will give you the ability to control what people have access to with regard to, you know, reporting mechanism, logging, things like that. I'll never forget, we had one case at a customer where they wanted to know how they could secure what was happening when data was being egressed out of a compute system. And up until some of the more recent architectural changes to some of those services, there really wasn't a great answer to the question, how can I tell what's being sent out? A lot of that has been cleaned up with the notions of things like private link and some of those areas to try to secure and harden those. But those are some of the tools that we want to start with to get an understanding. I mean, just go do the free secure score. It's going to give you some basic stuff to tell you, you know, hey, you don't have TDE turned on. You don't have always on encryption turned on. And maybe you don't want to, maybe you don't need to, but it's going to tell you that. And then you can say, okay, I'm going to ignore this for this machine or this database, but I'm going to say, okay, I need to encrypt it for this machine or this database.
Yeah, absolutely agree. There's so many resources out there. And, you know, one of the top asked things when people get these resources is to help make sense of that for their environment. So not that I'm going to do like a commercial or a plug for Aspiring. we do that interpretation because we are partners of Microsoft. And I just wanted to throw out there real quick that when you get these guides, you need to know when you flip a switch on what the ramifications of that flip of that switch is. So, you know, I know people tend to get very reactive and it's like, okay, there's a burglar in the house, turn all the lights on. Well, that might not be effective for you and your organization. So think it through and check those resources out and then seek a professional or your Microsoft rep or reach out, throw something in the comments here or whatever. Know the ramifications of the choices you're making, because to kind of bring it full circle, if you turn all those switches on, the question that or the statement you made early right from the get-go was, is this wall too high? Is it too big? Is it too thick? Is it going to hamper our ability to operate as an organization? Because the last thing we want to do is create inefficiencies. The last thing we want to do is be insecure and have our data walk off. But the second to last thing is create inefficiencies to where you can't operate, because both ways you're out of business, right?
Right. Yeah. No. Absolutely. And if you do a search for Azure Security in your favorite search engine, right? You get the Azure security documentation and it's a get started joy, begin your security journey right from there. And then you've got headings like fundamentals, data protection, identity management, security monitoring, security best practices and patterns, IoT security, logging and auditing, threat protection, right? And go on and on and on about, you know, all of the headings here. And these are all just guides that are in our documentation that give you the concepts that you need to follow in order to get to that point. Now, again, to shortcut it, your best bet is to use a partner, to use your Microsoft account team, if you have one available to you, to get to the meat and potatoes, as they say, of your conversation. Because you could read guides forever, right? And that's what enterprise architects are there for. I mean, they're going to, you know, understand all this stuff. They're going to architect out your solution, you know, using security best practices, because that's what they're really there to do. Maybe you don't have one. Maybe you're a small shop and you don't have that capability. Work with a partner to make sure you get it right. And one thing, I know you were running a little long here on time, but one thing I want to ask you, because I'm curious about your perspective on this is, you know, I know you guys work in, you know, sort of SMB, mid-market, those types of groups a lot of the time. And I'm curious, how often do you advise customers to do things like penetration testing on their networks?
We do quite frequently, but to your point, it depends on the customer, right? Mm-hmm. So when we're talking to corporations that are large to enterprise, that conversation's really easy to have, and it's very likely that they have a program in place. The mid-market seems to be the most underserved in that space because they generally have enough visibility and enough resources and things on the edge that their attack surface is much larger than your smaller organization. So they're the ones that tend to be the same statement I say is, why do you think most viruses are written for PCs? There's more of them, right?
Yeah,
so it's
right,
so, right. So there's more of that mid market. Now the juicy whales of the enterprise and larger class, yeah, sure, they're obviously targeted, but that mid market is what gets hit hard.
Sure.
The smaller organizations, it is a little easier to harden their services, mostly because they're using commodity services, or most of their services are SaaSified. So they're not really doing a lot of build. They're doing a lot of configure and deploy of things that are out there already, which has some of that framework done. So we have that conversation for the larger organizations for sure. It's generally done already. We can roll into our enterprise customers and say, hey, when was your last pen test? And they'll slide it across the table and say, last week.
Yeah,
but that mid-market, it's a blind spot to them, right? They just know there's ransomware out there, and they know that they're impacted, and they have that FUD, that fear, uncertainty, and doubt over cloud solutions. So we say, throw something against it, right?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Okay, great. Yeah, no, I was just curious, how you guys approach it.
Yeah. So at Aspirant, we have a security partner, Defy. So we do a lot of the Microsoft work, the security work, but Defy handles a lot of the penetration testing, and they're vendor agnostic. So like do everything from hardware level all the way deep down into Palo down to voice systems. They're pretty deep in that space. So we'll recommend that they talk with someone who's going to do a pen test, where we are more along the lines of the governance compliance. Let's make sure that we're doing the right things and the best things. Let's put a security plan in depth, which includes all of that stuff, right?
Right. Yep.
So I think the follow-on episode should be about maybe AIP and, or what's it called now? IPG, Information Protection and Governance. I believe that's what it's called now on M365. I'd love rebranding.
You tell me. It's a new fiscal year. I'm still trying to get my own.
There's everything from data loss prevention. There's a lot of conversations in this space, and it's been much asked for topics. So, hopefully we'll have another show around it. As usual, Chris, thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
It wasn't our regular data episode, but it's a much needed message, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. No. And again, ask the professionals, right? That's the biggest thing is if you have questions about it, understand what your requirements are and ask the professionals to give you a hand. Don't just wing it. Don't shoot from the hip. It's just not a good way to go.
I agree with you 100%. As always, we like to thank Aspirant for sponsoring the show, otherwise referred to as the day job. So we appreciate their sponsorship and everything that they do to help make this possible. And we'll see you all in the next go. Thanks.
Today's show is brought to you by Aspirant. You aspire, together we achieve. This production is for information and entertainment purposes only. Not all technologies and items discussed are compatible with your system or specific configuration. Your mileage may vary. Consult a professional before trying anything discussed on this show. Visit show notes for relevant information and links.
And I'll just tack this right on at the end. Okay. Take two.
I didn't clap last time.
All right. Well, that makes it better. Okay, ready? Three,
two,
one.